David Locke joins us right now. Weekly conversation brought to you by the Murdoch Auto Team. And David can talk about this too, because he's seen a lot of former players come in and try to coach at the NBA level. And some have some degree of success. Others, it doesn't work well for them at all. And I think there's probably an issue where if you're Deion Sanders and you're seeing your corner get killed over and over and over, and you go out there on the field and say, hey, do this and this and this, that's worked for me, I need you to be better. And the kid's like, well, you're Deion Sanders. I'm a guy playing at Jackson State. I'm sorry, I just don't have that same kind of skill set. And Deion's like, well, just do it. It's not that hard. Well, it wasn't hard for you, but it is hard for me.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's different. And I think a lot of these guys, it depends on the support staff that they – and if they understand how to manage a staff, which is also
– Well, have you heard the coaching staff?
No, I haven't.
Terrell Owens, wide receiver coach. Warren Sapp, defensive line coach.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's a really cool concept here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is what Deion's doing, but if you have made all this money and you want to go back and coach at these historically black colleges who are underfunded right now and support them and their athletic programs, and that's your mechanism, I mean, you can make it cool to go back to, play at Morehead and play at Howard and play at Jackson State. And, that conference could suddenly become, something else. And those colleges are really important. And so if this is suddenly a way to revive the historically black college, I know Chris Paul's been working on a great deal, but maybe Chris Paul's going to come back as a basketball coach here at some point.
Yeah.
But that would be a pretty incredible, commitment. And obviously you've got to be able to do it well. You can't just show up and be there, but certainly, there's now a bunch of kids that are walking around thinking about going to Jackson State that prop might not have been before, or that might have been really interested in going to a historically black college, but because the football program wasn't up to the task of, even a Mississippi State or a Mississippi or something like that, they end up not going there. Well, now all of a sudden you're sitting there and you're like, well, wait a sec, if I was going to go to Mississippi or Mississippi State, maybe I'm going to go to Jackson State instead and have a unique this experience and have the historically black college experience, and that's a better answer.
It's also bringing in Dennis Thurman and Mario Edwards. Each had probably 6 years in the league, both of them league coaching experience. You load it up with some Hall of Famers. You load it up with some former coaches. And by the way, the other one that's rumored right now, David, is Jason Phillips, who's currently the receivers coach at Utah State as their offensive coordinator. Is it kind of an eclectic, unique group of coaches that
I'd get a television crew in on those staff meetings too.
Yeah.
Immediately.
But I try to put it in terms of what I send my son there, and I look at the staff, and Warren Sapp worries me a little bit because, he does have a pretty ugly history. But I would send my son to play for Deion Sanders in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, Deion tried to run some athletic programs in Dallas in high school, and they didn't work. They didn't get credentialed and get the accreditation they needed. And so then it turned out the kids didn't get credit for the school. Manuel Mudiay got caught in the middle of that. And so that was problematic. I mean, it all depends on how they approach it. And there's just a bunch of different layers to it, right? So there's just a pure football aspect. Do you want your kid to play for Deion? There's the aspect of reviving the historically black college, which is probably where I thought about it more. And then there's a whole football aspect, Hans, that I just don't know the answer to. If you bring in a really highly traditionally qualified, I don't know that they're always highly qualified. I always think it's interesting what we classify as qualified, and then I watch some of them do it, and they're really bad. So, I always wonder, whether or not that really is the right approach. But let's go with traditionally qualified offensive and defensive coordinator, and then you surround them with this kind of incredible group of former players. Can the offensive and the defensive coordinator take care of enough of the X's and O's stuff, or is that not sufficient? I don't know football well enough to know and how the staff allotment. This is probably one of those bullcrap, subtly racist comments that we don't ever realize we're making, where Like, I think the easy answer is a bunch of people are going to make the comment that they don't think Terrell Owens and Warren Sapp are going to be diving into film game prep. Well, are we saying the same thing about Julian Edelman and Jared Allen if they're the coaches? Let's be careful on that one. So I don't know what Terrell Owens and Warren Sapp are going to do in, from a standpoint of grinding out as a coach or not.
Well, David, I know this. I've been around a lot of big egos, a lot of big egos in the world of sports. And it can get really conflicting really flat, really fast. If there's a certain step or hand placement, or if one guy wants to get really technical, I mean really technical, and diving deep in way too many different formations and shifts, and then a coach says, no, we got to dumb it down. That's where things get ugly really fast. And if Deion Sanders can come in and establish the hierarchy and say, my voice is number one, my offensive and defensive coordinator's voice are number two. Warren, T.O., all you guys, teach technique, work inside what they ask you to work inside. Then maybe, but you've got to have really good leadership to keep those egos from being overbearing in those meetings and trying to change things, you know, 2 hours before kickoff, where Warren Sapp's like, we could get pressure if we do these three things. And the D coordinator's looking at him like, man, I've been doing this for the last 8 years. What are you talking about? Can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a heck of a story. I would follow it. How about that?
Yeah.
I certainly would be there to keep an eye on it. The idea of having a TV crew there, I'm with you. I'm with you, Scotty. I'm having the TV crew there, and you know, if you're a 17-year-old kid, it'd probably be a heck of an experience.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's talk a little bit about Denver gives up. I mean, Anthony Davis hits a crazy shot. Incredible. Nuggets are down 0-2. Do we need to wait for them to go down 3-1 before we pay attention, or do you think this is the Lakers series and they're going to be just a little bit different than the Clippers and the Jazz?
I mean, I have a hard time believing that the Lakers are going to lose 4 or 5 games, right?
Yeah.
But that's now where we are. So that seems super unlikely. They're just too good. They've got LeBron. They're too good defensively, though Denver, you know, to their credit, and we saw it in that game, has continually gotten better in every series, and namely Jokic. Jokic has evolved as every series happens and gotten better at what he was doing. They're going to need, you know, they need a little what we're seeing that we, you know, we're not seeing a strong performance from their other guys right now. So, you know, Michael Porter Jr. gave them a little bit of a bounce, but Torrey Craig is not suddenly hitting threes, and Monte Morris is suddenly not giving them buckets, and Gary Harris, you know, went to 1 for 6. Like, they're not getting a lot of support from their other guys. And their offensive rating's way down. I think they were at about 104 in that game, which is a pretty big contrast to what we saw. So, you know, the Lakers are an elite defensive team with amazing length, multiple rim defenders. You know, I thought it was a big deal that they got 25 minutes, the Lakers did, of center minutes the other night. So half the game, they were able to play two bigs. They were +8 in those minutes. I thought that was really big. You know, I thought, you know, one of the things I thought could happen in this series is that if McGee and Howard aren't able to play and then Anthony Davis is marked up on Jokic the whole time, he wears down and he's not as effective, and then the Lakers get caught in a half-court game because AD's not running. I mean, the Lakers have to play in transition. That's the essence of what they have to do. And so, and Anthony Davis gets out in transition when he doesn't have to rebound. So maybe, you know, the other aspect of it is that they, you know, that half the game right now for him, he's able to be, you know, free and play out, and then he maybe has enough legs to make that shot late.
I asked Gordy Chiesa yesterday who he would give the current league or bubble MVP to, David, and I thought his answer was interesting. It differed from where I went or what I think. Scotty, I hadn't got yours yet, but David, bubble MVP right now. I want to see if you agree with either Gordy, myself, or with Scotty.
Haven't thought about it for 1 second. So a little bit of a difficult question.
I'll tell you,
first take, I'll take Jokic.
Okay. That's different than Gordy and I. Gordy took Anthony Davis. I continue to think it's Jimmy Butler. I feel like Butler's helped his team overachieve, and I know his numbers aren't as gaudy as Anthony Davis, especially in this current Denver series that they're in, but I feel like Jimmy Butler has been been the leader that you want from an MVP, and he's had the production, and he's had the defensive output. I guess you could say the same for Anthony Davis and for Jokic.
I mean, Denver's beat better teams, right? So than either of those two teams is, I think, what my first thought was. I mean, Miami beat an Indiana team that was on last legs and a Milwaukee team that was dealing. I think we're going to hear over time that the dysfunction inside that Milwaukee locker room was significant. I think there were some strong-minded personalities that took over that locker room away from the rest of it, and that team lost its vibe of and its interest to be together. You know, that's still been a huge part of this bubble story. We knew it. It's interesting how we know things going in, and then I think we kind of forget what we talked about. But one of the biggest things we talked about coming into the bubble was the fact that you're never going to be able to get away from it, and how do you get away from it? And we've talked about it from a mental health standpoint, but I also think it means that teams that like each other and get along have been able to have a better experience in the bubble than teams that did not. And I'm not convinced that Milwaukee wanted to spend any more time together as a group. I think some of the personalities in that group had won the day. And I'm really certain about that with the Clippers. So I do think that's a big part of the story. But I think I would still go with Jokic. I mean, I think he's won the two best series so far, beating the Jazz and beating the Clippers. And he's what makes them. I mean, Jamal Murray's got to make the shots, but Jamal Murray's not getting those shots without Jokic. He's what makes them unguardable.
Speaking of Jamal Murray, and I know individual, you know, plus minuses can get a little crazy, but he plays 44 minutes against the Lakers in game two, has a plus 16 plus minus. So there's only 4 minutes he's not on the court, and the Nuggets lose by two.
I didn't realize that.
I mean, that's a crazy stat to me.
How is that even possible?
I know, right?
Like, I'm trying to do the math in my head if there's enough possessions in 4 minutes.
Plus 16 in 44 minutes, and the Nuggets lose by two.
All right. So you're playing a 48-minute game, and you have 100 possessions. So there's two possessions a minute on each side, right? Like, if we just do... So there should have only been eight possessions on each side. How did it get to be 18-0?
That's what I'm wondering.
I mean, that's like what it had to be. It had to be 18-0.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
What's the plus minus of the of so who would have rotated in for the 4 minutes?
The
plus
there minus? Of the I'm looking at it right now. Monty Morris was -7 and Michael Porter Jr. was -6.
I mean, Gary Harris is minus 14 when he's out there.
I'm going to have to look at popcorn and see what, how that happened. That's crazy.
But I've never seen anything.
Is that a typo?
That's what I thought. I mean, I'm going off ESPN's box score.
All right, so Jamal Murray checks out at the 3:12 mark of the first quarter, and they go -8 before he checks back in 1:43.
Well, there you go.
He's out of the game for a minute and 29 seconds, and they went -8. He then checks out again in the second quarter for a grand total of a minute and 32 seconds, and they're -6. And they try it a third time. He checks out this time for less than a minute, and they're -4.
There you go. There's your number.
Holy cow. What's interesting, by the way, in both of these circumstances, is the run had kind of started before he checked out. Like, the Lakers go on a 15-3 run in that first quarter, eight of which is in that span at where he's at, part of which is in the game where he's out of the game. The Lakers went on a 14-1 run, but again, it was over a wider stretch than just the period of time in which he was What Mike Malone does with him that's interesting, by the way, is I bet if we he wraps his out of the game around timeouts, about 30 seconds on each side of timeouts, so that then he ends up with like a 5-minute break for a minute and a half.
Yeah.
It's a good way to do it. Wow, that's crazy. Nice find there, my friend.
Yeah. Not very often I get a surprise with a stat. In fact, I think that might be the first time.
I might be off my game, but that one's great. That's crazy. But do I get a little credit for the fact that I pulled up the...
Yeah, no, you get all the credit. Because if you would have... Because when you said typo, I'm like, oh, crap, I probably found a bad...
No, it's not a typo. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's really... I mean, LeBron was -9, right? That was like the big talked about item. And what it is that LeBron was out of the games when Jamal Murray was out. It's almost as though the minute Jamal Murray went out, that LeBron went out, that Jamal Murray went out.
Yeah. On the east side, I don't read too much into the – maybe I don't know, maybe I should – in the issues in the Boston locker room. They respond after game two when they had their little blow-up. They win game three. What's your take on the landscape of that series?
Well, the only reason I would take, I think they do have a bunch of really strong personalities, and I do, I have kind of said I think they have too many ball handlers on long term for that roster. I think they're going to have to make some significant adjustments, but I think they're great. I just think that team is so good. I mean, I've heard oh, they don't have depth. Well, okay, I don't care if they don't have depth. They played Enes Kanter 6 minutes, Wanamaker 9 minutes, and Grant Williams 9 minutes. Who cares? The other six guys they're playing are great, and five of them are borderline all-stars. I just think Boston's incredible. And if they've really figured out how to move the ball into a share, I think I was on with you guys last time, and I just said I'm not impressed by – they just become static too often, and as great as Brad Stevens is, I just see an unusual amount of possessions where I feel like nothing's happening and nothing's going on. But, I mean – Gordon Hayward is their fifth best player, arguably, and he is an all-star. He's great. That team is loaded. I mean, seriously. Jason Tatum or Jimmy Butler, who do you want?
Oh. In the bubble?
Come on. I want Jason Tatum. What's not? I mean, Jimmy Butler's cute and all, but I want Jason Tatum. He can get me a bucket.
All right.
Kemba Walker or Goran Dragic, who do you want?
Kemba.
Okay, Bam Adebayo or Daniel Tice. There's their advantage.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown or Jay Crowder.
Oh, let me think about that for a second, David. Yeah, give me
Gordon Hayward or Tyler Hero.
Hayward.
And Marcus Smart or Duncan Robinson. They're just the inverse of each other.
Yeah.
This isn't close.
So they turned that thing around then?
I just think Boston's great. I thought Boston was going to the finals the whole time. You know that. So,
yeah, that's true.
We beat them right before coronavirus hit, and I was stunned. But I just think they can score in multiple ways. They're interchangeable defensively. Other than Kemba, they don't have a defensive weakness. They're elite athletically at every position. I mean – most teams have three elite athletes. They have seven. They're amazing.
Yeah.
Again, that's why I look at Jimmy Butler's just his ability to carry this team and at least keep them focused and play focused. I know he's not the world that Jason Tatum is offensively, but Jimmy Butler's focus and his ability to rally the troops and get the troops to believe. I know that they're 2-1 and Boston could certainly come back. I just have been fascinated with what he's done to lead that team and focus.
Yeah, I'm not as overwhelmed as you are. I mean, I think he's really good, but I'm not
But even then,
I don't think he's doing any of it except for the fact that Bam Adebayo is great, that Eric Spoelstra is fabulous, and that Indiana and Milwaukee were highly dysfunctional.
And I know you kind of went through what's going on with the Pacers, but they swept them like they should have, and there were some pretty ugly scores that they put on them. And then they should have swept the Bucks. I think in that game four they had them at overtime, and the Bucks snuck out a win.
To me, that's an indictment on what was going. I was not there. I don't know. So you're pushing me a little further than I wanted to go. I made a pretty strong statement earlier. I probably should just hold where I was. Like, so Milwaukee was like the equivalent of like 64 win team this year, right?
Yeah.
And they pretty much rolled over and died and got swept in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then something was wrong with Milwaukee internally.
Had to have been.
Right? Like, if they lose to Miami in seven, then maybe Miami beats Milwaukee. They lose to Milwaukee in five, and really in three, it's over, right? The fourth game is the gentleman's sweep. And it was cute because Giannis wasn't – like, that team broke at the boycott and was never the same.
Yeah, something happened around that boycott era, didn't it?
Yeah.
David Locke here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. David, always a pleasure, my friend. By the way, Deion Sanders is refuting the coaching staff. Said, tweeted out, this is absolutely wrong. This is how junk gets started. Not a good way to get started with me. So apparently the coaching staff may not be as fun and exciting as we thought it might be.
Interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
All right. See you guys.
David Locke right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.